Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody right now, but in segments 2 and 3, we are going to throw to part one of a conversation I have with David Ramil of Locked On Heat, just like we did it a couple shows ago before the series kicked off. What I'm going to do for this, 5 minutes or so before we throw to that conversation, is take, a question or two from you guys on iTunes, and then I'll come back to the questions once we have another chance. We're super busy right now, so I promise I'm going to answer the questions at some point for you guys, even if I have to do a bonus episode to get those in. But for now, we're gonna. I'm always very interested by the way momentum shifts over the course of a series, and the best way to kind of get a gauge for that is to talk to the other team and the people who have their finger on the pulse of what the other team's fans are feeling. Let's go ahead though and answer a quick question here. QBreezy12 writes, thoughts on Bill Simmons and Stugatz suggesting the Heat should start Haslam for 6 hard fouls to take out one of LeBron or Anthony Davis on his podcast titled The Lakers Cruising. So Pete and I talked the other day about, this concept of objectivity, and like, to me, the worst people in the industry swear up and down that they're objective or that their analysis have no biases. But we all know that there are biases involved. There are biases, by the way, that like it's completely subconscious. It's not, there are some biases that we feel that we aren't necessarily in complete control of. Like, for example, I don't think beat reporters that cover only one team should have a vote for MVP, because all they see all year are the games in front of them. Whereas you look at somebody like Zach Lowe, you look at somebody, some other, kind of national names, and they pay, Jonathan Sharks from the Ringer is one of my personal favorites. Kevin O'Connor also. I mean, hell, I'm not saying that I should have an MVP vote. Maybe eventually I would like to have one in my career. I think I'm too young still right now to do it, but young in the same sentence, what a time. But for the sake of objectivity and understanding of the context under which all of these awards are won, I don't think a beat reporter should have a vote in it, because they're only watching the games that they have to cover. Or they aren't, even if they're watching other games, even if they just kind of turn on the NBA for a better understanding of what they're covering on their beat, it's not the same as tuning in specifically night in, night out to get a gauge or completely understand what is going on across the NBA. So anyway, the reason I'm talking about all of this is with Simmons, with Stugatz, with the whole Lebatard crew, other shows across various networks, I actually prefer it if they admit their biases, try to overcome them in their analysis, but everything that they say is painted with the understanding that, yeah, I'm not perfect on this front. There are going to be some things that I say that might be painted by my experiences, my preferences, my fanhood, either growing up or now, or whatever. And this is how I look at the league. And with Simmons and with Stugatz and those guys, Simmons, he's a Celtics fan. He can't go 15 minutes without mentioning the 88 Celtics or whatever team that he seems to really like. Stugatz is a New Yorker, so he loves the Jets and he loves the Knicks, and he hates the Jets and he hates the Knicks because they're so very easy to hate. But still, if the Jets do anything remotely good, he gets super excited because that's his childhood team, maybe not sucking. And, with that conversation they had about Haslam, I think it went too far. The concept of taking out a player is just out and out horseshit. That is wishing a player to get injured and specifically injured on purpose is just awful in 2020. We shouldn't be doing that anymore. It was dumb we ever did it in the first place, but you definitely can't do that now. And so from that standpoint, I found the conversation pretty gross. And then just in terms of practicality, I don't think Haslam is fast enough to foul anybody. He hasn't played a game, it feels like, in like 3 years. So he's just kind of this champion of the Heat. He is he's been given, seems like a lifelong contract, or as long as he wants to stick around, they're going to give him enough to stick around and be on the roster. He does help with Heat culture, and that's something that we know has been productive this season especially. So but all that said, he's old. He's washed. He could try to foul AD, but I don't think he would be able to get close enough to really do anything to him. So I think it was a dumb conversation on multiple fronts, and it's especially dumb when you consider where we're at in 2020 and the things that you cannot say about players and about situations out there on the court. I think it was gross in that regard, and I thought it was just stupid because it was a stupid conversation. That's enough of me talking about another show, though. Let's go ahead and throw to the conversation I had with David of Locked On Heat, and we will go ahead and talk to you guys after the game tonight. Today's show is brought to you in part by Rock Auto. Head on over to rockauto.com. Search whatever part it is that your car needs and marvel at how quickly you find said part. It's insane. It's legitimately insane how quickly you can find whatever part that you might be looking for, no matter what kind of car or vehicle that you're driving, or vehicle as the people out here like to say that you're driving. And you will be shocked at how quickly you find that part, and then shocked twice over for how cheap the parts actually are, given how much I'm sure all of you have already probably paid to get your car repaired previously by anybody else. So go ahead, try it out, get your hands dirty, learn how your car works, and that'll make you a better driver out there. The sense of pride that comes with working on your own car makes you less likely, I think, to push it too hard again, which makes you a safer driver. And rockauto.com is the best place to take care of all of this. So again, that is rockauto.com. And then tell them that you found them through us by writing Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, we are now joined here by David Ramil of Locked On Heat. We talked right before the series kicked off. We are now at that kind of weird halfway mark of a series. The Lakers are up 2-1. The Heat are down two very key players. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that we probably won't see a better performance for the rest of the series than what Jimmy Butler gave us over the weekend. I just want to start with, because I think both you and I heading into the series thought that the Lakers should have been favored in it. Obviously, the loss of Goran Dragic and the loss of Bam Adebayo does nothing to really sway that. It just kind of really hammers that home. But I don't know, man. Like, if I were the Heat, I wouldn't look at it from like a win the series, lose the series standpoint. I would just say, like, you know what? It looks like some of our very important players moving forward look like they belong in a final series, where the other team has Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
Yeah, I don't think they ever really viewed it that way. It was kind of one of the same points that I brought up in our pre-series conversation, was that Miami, whether unrealistically or not, always envisioned that they would be at this point. Like, they recognize they had a difficult journey to go through some of the top teams in the East, and that maybe they weren't perceived that way. they always thought the finals was realistic, and that was the goal. And I know a lot of that gets overblown because it's Miami and there's always this chatter about Heat culture and everything else. But if they can acquire a superstar like Jimmy, and early in the season you start to see that they're very, very good, and then you make that mid-season trade for Iguodala and Crowder that's paid incredible dividends, I think that's the realization then that they are a legitimate title contender. And of course, look, in the offseason, who knows what can happen? I think looking at this front office and Pat Riley, he's always looking to add a superstar that even as good as their performance has been up to this date, even if they win the championship, there's still going to be a hope that they can acquire another star, whether it's a trade or a free agent signing or something along those lines, because that's just the way Riley does things. I mean, that was a very, very good team. Even going back to, let's say, 2003, 2004, you know, they had Dwayne Wade as a rookie there. They had some good young players. They weren't satisfied with that. They made an instant acquisition for Shaquille O'Neal, as you well know. Mm-hmm. And then the following year, after getting to the Eastern Conference Finals, they could have stayed pat, no pun intended, and they made a huge trade, the largest trade up to that point in NBA history, to acquire Jason Williams and Antoine Walker and James Posey and all these role players to balance out the Dwayne Wade, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, pairing at the top. And they won a championship in 2006. So their feeling is that there are always going to be contenders, again, unrealistically or not. And then if they can add another star, they'll cement that positioning. But as far as the series is concerned, I mean, yes, it's shown that Butler is a top 10, 15 player. I don't think there was any doubt about that move. As far as most people who have some general understanding of basketball, you can't quantify his impact the same way as other players, because he just does everything well. He's a great defender, a great rebounder, a great passer, and a great scorer on occasion. And I think in game three, we saw how potent that scoring can be.
I actually think for both of these teams, one of the things that I've spent a lot of time thinking about, especially the last 24 hours, has been, because like Adam Silver is talking about starting the next season around Christmas, right? Or right. In January, which would make for a really short offseason. And I think for both of these teams, given how well they get along, given the amount of culture that is evident in just about everything that they do across the entire roster, I really think that this, if they do go through such a short offseason, that allows both these teams to pick up right where right where they left off. And like you were talking about with Miami. Pat, you don't get to be as successful as Pat Riley has been in the NBA with ever being happy with just getting there, right? Or just showing that you belong. But, you know, learning that and the way that they learned this, and now having just a couple months to, you know, hey guys, we'll see you next week, right after the finals, basically. It allows, I think, that culture to continue to cultivate, and it allows everybody to understand, especially, you know, if Miami falls short of their goal or if the Lakers fall short of their goal, they now get to sit on that idea that they fell short now for only a little while and then pick right back up where they left off whenever the off season concludes, or whenever they all get back together for training camp. For some of these guys, like, you know, Jimmy Butler has an insane offseason regimen. And, you know, for guys like him, knowing how close they are and given the amount of confidence that he has, not just in himself, but in Pat Riley, in Eric Spoelstra, in his teammates, I think I would be thrilled, you know, for either of these teams that, all right, great. We get a little bit of time off. You get to reset a little bit, go back and see your families, and then is right back at it. I think that would be, it's going to be a really fascinating subplot for the entire league.
Yeah, without a doubt. I was wondering, as you're talking about this, what's the strategy for the Lakers going into next season? Is it just to constantly keep retooling around that big two? Is it to add another star level player? Because I think with Miami's case, you have like a lot of impending free agency questions for key players, and their depth is much more essential to their success, given that they don't have the more talented players like Davis and James. So they're offseason is probably going to be very different than Los Angeles's, regardless of how successful or not they are in the finals. But what's the strategy for next season as far as the team building aspect is concerned for the Lakers?
Well, I think it all really depends on what the market's going to look like. You know, are guys going to opt out of player options? Are teams going to look to rebuild or just try to, you know, get back at it next year? Is the cap, you know, what's the cap situation going to be given the amount of revenue lost throughout the entirety of the season? Depending on that, you know, I think the Lakers, because they'll have their mid-level exception, their full mid-level available to them. So I think that allows them, that might give them access to another impact player. I think they've kind of learned at this point what Kyle Kuzma is or what he isn't. So they might look to upgrade at the third best player. I think what they would probably like to do is go into next season with something closer to an understanding of, all right, this is LeBron is player A, Anthony Davis is player B. Here's our C option, you know, and here's what we could go to so that those stretches where either LeBron and or Davis are sitting, that it doesn't hurt as bad when those guys are out on a nightly basis. But even there, like, it's just tough because, you know, do you build for the regular season and do you build for the slog of an 82 game campaign, or do you build for the sprint? You know, and I think one thing that we're really going to have to start identifying here is, all right, who's built for 16 wins? Who puts their team together with that postseason in mind more prevalently than the regular season? Because we've seen, you know, super successful regular season teams fall short because it's such a different sport. So I think in general for the postseason, given what historically works, I think the Lakers probably look at finding another, you know, a third best player. But even there, you know, if they win a championship, I could also see them saying, you know what, why fix what isn't broken?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking back to LeBron-led teams in Miami and Cleveland, you know, mm-hmm. going to the finals every year during that span. It was more about building around the edges, I guess, or along the edges, you know, kind of upgrading a shooter or, you know, adding another free agent veteran that is looking to capitalize on a championship towards the end of their career. That's a strategy that has worked for Riley for years. And he certainly implemented it during Miami's Big Three era. And while he was with the Cavaliers too. So I imagine it would probably include something along those lines. Although it could, again, as you pointed out, maybe even include a major upgrade to the quote unquote third best player on the roster. But go ahead.
I also think, you know, this is going to feel like I'm diminishing the success of either the Lakers or the Heat or whoever comes out of this series with the championship win. But the league is probably going to be better next year. You know, Kevin Durant is going to be back. The Warriors are going to be back. So, like, I don't think either the Lakers or the Heat can kind of sit back and rest on their laurels and say,
no,
you know, this is good enough, because I don't think what was good enough this year is going to be better or good enough next year. You know, Milwaukee is going to be absolutely desperate to win a championship and hopefully keep Giannis in town. There, you're going to have, you know, just some younger teams, like we saw Phoenix, right? What they did in the seeding games. If they carry some of that over to next year, that's a significantly better team in the Pacific Conference that the Lakers are in. And then the Eastern Conference, like, we're just still kind of waiting. Like, is Boston going to consolidate some of its talent and get somebody a little bit more well-known than, you know, even Jason Tatum in terms of postseason success? Are the Raptors going to rebuild? Are they going to start tearing it down? Or are they just going to try to add to it and make another serious run now with Pascal Siakam getting a year better? So I think the NBA in general is going to be so much better to the point next year where both Miami and the Lakers really have to look at themselves and be honest and say, this was great. This was really cool. Either getting to the finals or obviously winning one, but the league is going to be very different next season.
I feel like those are questions that happen every offseason. There's always like a team that steps up or that you expect to step up and doesn't, or I mean, a player forces a trade. That's another possibility too, is that you're always through the course of the offseason. I don't know, at least from my perspective, the offseason, even though it could just be 2 games away or it could be 4 games away, it just feels impossibly distant just because of everything that we've had to go through from an NBA lens just to get to this point, like the hiatus, the bubble, the formation of it, the seeding games and everything that has gone into it. Like I just, again, the off season and what might happen. I know it's not a very long time. As you pointed out before, it could just be a couple weeks before you have to go back into training camp almost. But at the same time, I don't know. Those seem like such bigger pictures, but I'm curious though. You feel, it seems like, at least in our conversation, which you did not, you know, make me privy to prior to our conversation here, but are you already thinking beyond this season? Are you already looking ahead to next season, or is that just something that came up during the course of this conversation?
I'll answer this actually after a quick break. Today's show is brought to you also in part by Built Go, the makers of Built Bar, put together these protein/energy pouches that, like today for example, Avery was up a little bit earlier than I was anticipating, so you know, I was dragging a little bit this morning, didn't really feel like drinking coffee just because sometimes it kind of messes with my system, so I just tried one of these Built Go pouches and felt an immediate, you know, pick me up, felt way better, actually kind of filled me up too because there's some protein in them as well. And I was ready to go and get through the early part of this morning, get Avery fed and get her ready to take a nap and then, you know, really fully start my day. And I would not have been able to do that without Built Go packs. So what you're going to want to try, it's for, you know, a mental or physical wall, whatever it is, try Built Go. It's an easy to take 1.5 ounce package. You can put it in your briefcase, you can put it in your golf bag. Like I said last time, they're just sitting here on my desk. It's the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus it's natural, so it's better for the body. There are 3 flavors, peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate milk, chocolate mint, and they all taste fantastic. So visit builtgo.com, use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 30% off your next order. Just like with Locked on Built Bar, it's every order, your next order, not your first one, but your next one. And it's 30% off, but only if you go to builtgo.com and then use promo code LOCKED. 30% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. I'm trying to, because, you know, as LeBron said, and of anybody to say this, that the fact that it was LeBron saying, like, no, sometimes you just got to stop and smell the roses and enjoy this for what it is, because making it to the finals doesn't happen every year for everybody.
Right.
So I'm still pretty focused on the series, but like even there, it's kind of hard not to kind of look ahead given the injury situation that the Heat are in. Now, if they win Game 4 and it's now a 3-game series with no home court advantage for either team, and Miami now has all of the momentum heading into that 3-game series, then I'll obviously be a lot more focused on what the hell is going on in this one. But yeah, I think this is just how the news cycle works. Like the Lakers made the finals, and I think like 3 out of the, you know, probably about 60% of the questions that get asked for mailbags have always been about, well, all right, so how can they improve from Kuzma's spot? Like how can they, can you upgrade Rondo's position? Can you, what, you know, if LeBron takes a step back, what do they have to acquire to be able to make up for that? And I just think like we as a generation aren't particularly good at just enjoying the plate in front of you. You're already thinking about dessert.
That's interesting. I can tell you from a Heat fan perspective, at least from what I've seen, there have been questions or kind of just like a little, I think one person even suggested, you know, what if if the Heat were to win, this would prior to the start of the series, would it be bad for the future? Like, would a free agent want to come to a team that had just won a championship and things along those lines? So there's always going to be questions like that. But I mean, it almost sounds, at least to me, that like the series win is a foregone conclusion for you. Am I overstepping my thought in that? Because it just sounds like you're pretty confident moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Butler put together a tour de force performance, right? And was just outright the best player on the court. And unless he, you know, unless you think he could do that three more times, and the Lakers, by the way, were like still kind of sort of in that game right up until like the last couple minutes of it. So, you know, I still feel like the Lakers are probably still significantly better, I think, than Miami. But the thing about Jimmy Butler teams, especially those that buy into kind of his persona or his, the way that he goes about his business, yeah, is they're going to fight. They're going to scratch and claw, and they aren't going to give you an inch. If you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. So I still am very confident. Like, I've always thought that the Lakers were going to win this one in five, but you just, for one thing, you don't want to tempt the basketball gods and play around with your food and allow them to do something dumb that would take the series away from you. And then, you know, I just don't think you want to mess around and give Jimmy Butler or any of his teammates, especially the shooters on that team, any kind of momentum to think that they can. Like, we already saw Tyler Hero become a meme because of that face that he made at the end there.
Yeah.
You know, if they start getting some confidence in this thing and
they've got
confidence, like, yeah, like if they really, like, I think they've always felt like, maybe heading into it when everybody was healthy, yeah, we could beat the Lakers here. And then everybody gets hurt, and I'm sure there was a pause where they said, crap. And then they go out and they win a game without those guys. Now they're saying, why can't we do that three more times? And I just, from the Lakers' standpoint, where they're standing right now, I just, you don't want to mess around and allow a team to think that way.
So, Well, take me through your thought process there in that, because why can't they win? Why can't they do that three more times?
Well, I mean, for one thing, Jimmy Butler's performance is something we've literally never seen before when LeBron James is on the court, right?
Okay.
Where somebody outscores, out rebounds, out assists, like that has never happened with LeBron before. And right. So if you think that can happen three more times, then, you know, and I'm sure Jimmy Butler probably does too.
No, I don't think he does. I don't think he does, and I don't think it's possible. But I also don't think that they're counting on that. That yeah, it was what they needed in game three,
yeah,
is different than that's what they're counting on. I think moving forward, they're looking for everybody else to take a step up, and I think he provides that kind of inspirational spark to do that. And I think we'll see in game four a better all-around attack from Miami, especially knowing that Bam Adebayo is likely to play. And I think that changes things dramatically. Mm-hmm. Like, I know from the Lakers' perspective, it's like, well, when Bam was there in game one and when Goran was there in game one, they were still getting blown out. And that's not entirely true. When all three of those players were on the court, obviously the statistics showed that they were doing pretty well. And then Bam got into foul trouble and the momentum shifted pretty dramatically. But even, I think going back, while Miami won game three, going back to the second half of game two, like, they seemed, at least to me, figure something out defensively where they made things very, very difficult for Los Angeles. And I think it's a strategy that they'll employ moving forward that I think is going to cause the Lakers some problems. Now, I mean, I could be wrong, but it seems like it's been working. Like, they were able to cut an 18-point lead down to half in game two. They were able to win game three. And I think it's still a lot closer than a lot of people and certainly a lot of Lakers fans expect. Like, I've always thought that Miami's depth was their biggest strength. Like I told you in our preview, it's not about Jimmy Butler. It's not about the top end talent. It's the fact that you could get players, you know, again, as we talked about before, players 3 through 7. If you look at the most talented, quote unquote, most talented players in the series, and I think Miami had those, they could all step up so that at one point they could be better than either of the top two and on the Los Angeles side of things. And I think you can get a big game out of Tyler. He has not had it. You can get a big game out of Duncan. And if that's the case, I don't know. I still like Miami's chances. And so I know that it seems like I'm talking crazy or being a homer and things of that sort, but the reality is that this was a team built to beat you in many ways. And while you have, I think the approach, or at least the perspective, and maybe I'm wrong, from the Lakers, you know what you're getting out of them. You're getting the top two players. You're getting two of the best players on in the league, perhaps. And that's it. After that, how else do you kind of redefine yourself? And, you know, especially if Miami can continue to take away those players on the edges out of the game as well as they did in game three.
So you mentioned that it felt like Miami figured something out against the Lakers, especially defensively. And I think it's somewhat semantics, you know, I feel like the way to beat the Lakers, or the way to make things difficult on them, is just to really focus and really stay disciplined in, even if, you know, KCP or Danny Green or Kyle Kuzma knocks down, you know, maybe a three here or there, you still, like, you, if they take a shot, there's some question as to what's going to happen there. But if you allow LeBron to get to the rim, there is no question what's going to happen when he gets there. And so I you know, for Portland, they quote unquote figured it out for a game. Denver figured it out for stretches. Houston figured it out. And really it's a really poorly kept secret. If you just force the Lakers to beat you from the outside, and some nights they might, but if you force them to really knock down their shots, and you put the game in the hands of Danny Green, who goes 0 of 4 from 3-point range, KCP goes 1 of 3 from 3-point range, you know, Rondo goes 0 of 3, Caruso goes 1 of 3, and so if you force those guys to beat you, that's how you beat the Lakers. You know, it's where they knock a couple down, and players, you know, break away from the strategy. And we saw this as the Lakers wore down the teams that they beat to this point. Those guys would knock a couple down, and then the opposing team would show, you know, that much more attention to Green and KCP and Kuzma, etc. And then that allowed LeBron and AD to really dominate those games. I think the longer that Miami stays disciplined and really forces the Lakers role players to beat them, like, that's how you take advantage of the lack of depth that the two, you know, the depth gap between the two teams is, if you really force those other guys to beat you. It's just a lot easier said than done, especially if Green makes a shot here or there and he gets going, or if KCP gets going, then the math gets pretty difficult.
No, I could see that perspective. Are you at all concerned then about Bam's return, or do you think it's just not that big a deal one way or the other?
I think anytime you get a player as good as Bam back, that's going to have an impact. But I also think, though, like, I think bigs who can spread the floor have given the Lakers the most issues consistently this year. Yeah. And, like, you can't play Dwight against Kelly Olynyk. You can't play Dwight against even Myers Leonard. And that forces AD to play the five, and you kind of take away from some of the identity that the Lakers have built to this point. So if Miami can find a balance where Bam comes back, but they still have the Olynyks and the Myers Leonards of the roster out there just on occasion to mitigate against what Dwight is able to do, I think that gives that finding that balance is Miami's best chance at beating the Lakers, especially if Bam isn't 100%, right? Like, if he's diminished at all, then you kind of have to consider playing those other guys who become bigger matchup problems than an 80% Bam Adebayo.
Yeah, no, that's all fair. I don't know how sustainable giving Myers minutes is, because while I think he's been a positive impact player, again, because he spaces the floor, it just changes things on the defensive end. Like, he just can't rotate. He can't, you know, he can't move as quickly as either Olynyk or Adebayo, certainly. So Olynyk, however, is a question for me because I wonder if we're going to see a change to that starting lineup where maybe if Bam does come back and he is healthy enough to go. And I don't think they'd put him out there knowing that this is a huge departure. If you've been following the news or if your listeners have been following the news, the fact that the team has been the one holding out Adebayo, mm-hmm. that is kind of shocking. And I don't know if that's just wordplay here or lip service. You know, it's just whether or not they're just trying to come across as a very concerning organization, because he generally are not that, just as Deion Waiters. But at the same time, the fact that they're holding him out, that they're that their doctors are telling him, no, you can't go out there and play, is very, very interesting to me, because I think if he could go out there with one leg, they'd find a way to put him out there under normal circumstances. Maybe that's not the case now. I don't know. Either way, if he's got out there, it's because he's healthy. And if he's healthy and you can put him out there alongside Olynyk, I think that would be really, really interesting, because I wonder then if you could stick, you know, again, create that mismatch with Olynyk and Dwight, and then have Bam be able to at least be the initial defender on Davis the same way that Crowder was. And while that might put Adebayo at the risk of foul trouble, it's always good to have a break glass in case of emergency player like Crowder who can get hot and can connect from the outside, or even in game three, you know, put the ball down and occasionally get to the rim or use back cuts and screens very effectively the way he did. So it certainly adds to Miami's depth, and it makes for an interesting potential mismatch, or at least some more adjustments for a rotation.